Welcome to the Grace Bible Church podcast, a deeper discussion of the previous week's sermon with our teaching pastors. For more information and resources, visit our website at grace-bible.org.
Thanks for joining us. I'm Brian Fisher here with Matt Morton. Today we're talking about the flood in Genesis 6 through 9 and a particular issue related to the flood. Was it global or was it local? Matt, to set the stage for this conversation, I want to read a few verses from Genesis chapter 7, beginning in verse 19. It says, "The water prevailed more and more upon the earth, so that all the high mountains everywhere under the heavens were covered. The water prevailed 15 cubits higher, and the mountains were covered. All flesh that moved on the earth perished, birds and cattle and beasts and every swarming thing that swarms upon the earth, and all mankind. Of all that was on the dry land, all those in whose nostrils was the breath of the spirit of life died." It has been discussed and debated extensively whether the flood was over the entire earth or whether it was just localized. Now, from a theological perspective, it's clear that at the very least, all of humanity was wiped out in this judgment. So if humanity had not spread beyond a local region, probably in this Fertile Crescent region, then the flood could have just been local and accomplished that purpose of judging all of mankind. But it's also been observed that the Hebrew word eretz can refer to the land, and in the Pentateuch, particularly the Promised Land area, it can also refer to the entire earth. So would you discuss with us a little bit the interpretive options for local or global flood?
Sure. And you're right. Traditionally, most interpreters have assumed in the history of the church and the history of Jewish interpretation that this was global. It covered the whole earth. There are some challenges, particularly that have arisen in, say, the past 100 years or so with the global flood perspective. And most of those challenges relate to the science of a worldwide flood like what seems to be described at face value in Genesis 6 through 9. Some of the problems you run into, for example, are the water itself. If you have water that rises to about 5,000 meters across the surface of the earth, so we're talking about 15 to 20,000 feet across the surface of the earth, where did all the water come from and where did it go? At present, there's not that much water in the oceans or in the clouds. And so there have been some solutions that people have proposed. One could be that there was a large canopy filled with water that covered the entire earth that was emptied out at that time. But again, one of the challenges you have with that is that would increase the temperature of the earth significantly to a point where it might not be habitable. It would change the oxygenation levels of the earth, where there might not be enough oxygen in the atmosphere for people to breathe. And so some of those challenges have risen. Some people will suggest, well, perhaps the continents actually sank and rose again. But again, you struggle with issues of, you know, our current rates of continental movement don't seem to be that fast. And so there are some, from the perspective of geologists in particular, some challenges with a global flood. And I lay these out not to say that a global flood didn't happen, but just to say these are questions that have been, that have to be answered. Another one relates to the animals on the ark. If we look at our current animal species in the world, assuming we're talking about land animals, there's 1.5 to 2 million species that we're aware of. Even if you assume that Noah only put what we call animals of the first kind, so he puts a wolf instead of every species of dog, you don't have a poodle and a collie and, you know, every species of dog. If the flood is only a few thousand years ago, then you have to deal with rates, fast rates of evolution in the last few thousand years to create now all of the different species that we do see. And so there are some problems with a global flood. Now, certainly the text itself, at face value, again, seems to imply that the flood covers the earth. And yet, as you mentioned, Brian, there's a couple of issues to keep in mind. For example, the word eretz that is often translated earth here, many places, if not most places in the Old Testament, it actually refers to the land of Israel and the surrounding environment. So Genesis 12 is a great example. God tells Abraham, leave your land and go to the land I will show you. That's the same word, Eretz. Now, he's obviously not asking Abraham to go to Mars, right? He's not asking him to go to another planet. So when it says that the land is flooded, we have that option. You do have a couple of other problems here in the passage you just read. The water prevailed 15 cubits higher. Now, if that means it was 15 cubits higher than the highest mountains in the known world, certainly that has to necessitate a global flood. Right. But another option is that the water prevails 15 cubits higher from its starting point, and the mountains are covered from the perspective of Noah, who is in the ark. Not to mention that their view also of mountains in the region could be that they're looking at the mountains in their land and the far-off mountains that were higher, the ranges that are much, much higher, 17,000-18,000 feet, aren't included in the descriptions. In other words, it could be that the author, that Moses, as he's writing, is simply looking at the perspective of the land itself.
Right. It seems that that's a possibility if you read in chapter 8. Verse 5, it says, the water decreased steadily until the 10th month. In the 10th month, on the first day of the month, the tops of the mountains became visible. So, chapter 8, verse 5, the tops of the mountains are visible. But then in chapter 8, verse 9, it says, the dove found no resting place for the sole of her foot. So she returned to him in the ark, for the water was on the surface of all the earth, that is all Eretz. So the tops of the mountains are visible, but the entire earth is covered. So it appears in that section, at least, that what Moses is saying is the whole land is covered, but in the distance he could begin to see the tops of the mountains.
Right. And one of the things that's important to keep in mind, even in this whole discussion, is that the Hebrew language doesn't always use words like all and whole in the same way that we do or tend to do. So when we say all the earth, we think everything everywhere. When we say all the animals, we're thinking all the ones in the world. But you have illustrations like Deuteronomy 2:25, where God says, I will put the fear of Israel in all of the nations under heaven. Now, obviously, at this point, we're looking primarily at those nations really that are surrounding Israel, the Canaanite nations, maybe the Egyptians. We're probably not talking about the Native Americans who had never heard of Israel at that point. So language like that can be used in an extensive way, really to indicate a more localized phenomenon, and that's not unusual in the Old Testament at all. Now, on the side of the global flood, there are a couple of issues that need to be dealt with. You know, Peter mentions the flood in 2 Peter chapter 3, and in connection with the flood, he says, the world at that time was destroyed, being flooded with water. But by his word, the present heavens and earth are being reserved for fire, kept for the day of judgment and destruction of ungodly men. And so you could argue that Peter believed in a global flood, that he's saying, just as the world was destroyed with fire, one day God will burn up the world. You're not necessarily forced into that interpretation of Genesis if you believe that, you know, really Peter is painting with broad strokes here, that he's saying just as God destroyed humanity, just as God ended humanity, he also will one day destroy it, the earth again.
Right, right. And in 2 Peter 3, verse 6, again, we use vocabulary a little bit differently than the Hebrews did or the Greeks did. Verse 6 says, through these things, the world existing at that time, and it is the word cosmos, which can mean the universe.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or it can mean the earth, or it can mean the inhabited area here, or it can refer to humanity. You know, that is humanity dwelling on the earth who are in rebellion against God.
Right.
And that's typically the way that John uses it.
Right. And so all of these things actually bring up a great point that when we're talking about global or local flood, it's important to note that this is a debate that happens even amongst those who believe in the inerrancy of Scripture. And it is possible to hold to the inerrancy of Scripture and yet interpret it a little bit differently on issues like this. And so the questions here really are not ones of whether the Bible is true. It is a legitimate attempt to go, what exactly is the most reasonable understanding of this passage? And so if there was a global flood, there's no problem even with saying, you know, the text says there's a global flood, and so we can trust that God can miraculously do anything he wants. God could put all of that water on the earth, and he could take all of that water away, and we don't even have to have scientific evidence that it happened for it to be true, if we believe in a God that is that powerful. On the other hand, from the regional or local flood perspective, it's not outside the boundaries of the text as we might understand it to say. It could be regional, but remember, when you're talking from the perspective of Moses writing the book of Genesis, his world is contained around that Fertile Crescent and near the Mediterranean basin. And so when he talks about all of life being flooded, it's not necessary to assume that he means it in the way that we might mean it from our modern perspective, that his perspective of the world could have been very different from ours, and that's an acceptable interpretation.
Matt, thanks so much. As you wrap us up, remind us again that the flood is dramatic, that that God, whether it's local or global, he wiped out almost all of humanity except for one family. Why did he do it?
Right. That's the key to the whole passage, is ultimately God chooses to judge his creation because they are destroying everything he's made, because sin has gotten to a place where everything they think, everything they do is always evil, it tells us in Genesis 6. And so God reaches a place where judgment is the necessary course of action so that he can start again and work toward humanity fulfilling his purposes on the earth. And so that's the primary issue in this passage, regardless of whether you think global or local flood, is God is judging humanity and all of humanity. But in the midst of that, we see the grace of God with the ark of Noah rising above the floodwaters so God can start again.
Right. So God, in judging, is actually exercising grace because he is rescuing humanity from itself.
Absolutely.
Matt, thanks. Appreciate your time. For more information and more resources, you can get on our website at grace-bible.org.